Hey, welcome back. You want to get up to the coasttocoastam.com website and check out the In the News section. Sean Latasur, our webmaster tonight, has posted some tantalizing tidbits. This is a great story. A jury in the UK, I should ask James Abbott if he's heard about this. A jury in the UK used a Ouija board to find a murderer guilty. This was a case back in 1994. It made headline news after it was revealed that four jurors used a Ouija board to reach their verdict. Again, that's in the news section up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll come back and take your phone calls for James Abbott as we continue to delve into the Outsider's Guide to UFOs right here on Coast to Coast AM. Stays with us. The Outsider's Guide to UFOs, Volume 1, Mystery and Science, and Volume 2 is well underway. All right, James, are you ready to take some calls?
Yeah, indeed, Richard. Thanks a lot.
All right, first-time caller Lorena is in Yelm, Washington. Lorena, welcome to Coast. Good morning.
Good morning. Still good evening. Well, it's good morning here, too. I'm so really excited to speak with your guest because I'm sitting here reading, and I heard the words UFO and Loring Air Force Base, and that's where I'm originally from.
Ah, so, do you remember that incident, Lorena?
No, I don't. It's Lorena.
I'm sorry, Lorena.
That's all right. I don't remember that, and I was living there in 66 and 67, and I don't remember that at all. Strange.
But, is there anything about that incident you wanted to ask James about?
There are a lot of things going on, those things. I'm just wondering if there's been anything recently since 66, 67.
That's a great point. Have we had any more recent UFO incursions on Air Force bases? In particular, we haven't heard anything about nukes being shut down recently, have we?
No, we haven't. It's not strictly true. There was a report back about 3 years ago that nuclear weapons in the UK had been shut down. Most of our nuclear weapons in those days were bombs or standoff weapons that we loaded onto bombers. And there is a statement that happened back in the 70s and early 80s. And the Air Force Base thing is very interesting because no military likes to reveal that their bases have been compromised. So you very rarely get that. But in Cosford in Gloucestershire in the UK back in 1993, so that's 30 years almost after Loring, the base was circled by an object which was spotted by RAF police and by an RAF officer, and it later flew across the base in order to escape. But Cosford was not a nuclear base.
All right, Lorena, thank you for checking in. Glad to have you aboard as a first-time caller. Let's say hi to Mike in Reno, Nevada. Mike, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Good morning. Secretary of State Kerry in December 2016, along with alleged moonwalker Buzz Aldrin, went to Antarctica. Obviously, the melting ice must have revealed a craft, or Aldrin wasn't there. I'd like to get your guest's comment on that. But, Richard, can I make a couple of quick points before that? These objections about the speed of light are easily done away with. But the other point I want to make, we're focusing here on the Anglo world. China, India. Two civilizations that are 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 years old. The revelations will come from the Chinese and the Indians because they're not burdened with what I call the twin C's of capitalism and Christianity. So I'd like to get your and your guest's comments on that.
Well, China is saddled with another problem, and that is it's a materialist worldview with little patience for freedom of information. So that's going to be a major stumbling block as far as China goes. India, who knows? Maybe. Far more open society. China, I don't see it happening there. How about you, James?
Uh, depends what you mean by happening. Yeah, what you're talking about is
disclosure, I guess. Disclosure.
Yes,
yeah.
I can't see it happening in China. No, they keep far too tight a rein on things. Unfortunately, China suffers from the big C, which is communism and its aftermath, and the need for strong government. And China has always been like that. You know, I could go on for a long time about that. But going back to Buzz Aldrin and Antarctica, that particular event is fascinating. But again, you know, we always suffer from this lack of proof, lack of evidence that these things happen, apart from maybe one or two people saying that it did and coming up with films and stuff on the internet. But if it did, then great, let's hear more about it and let's get things going. Edgar Mitchell thought that UFOs were being covered up by the US government, and clearly Buzz Aldrin, although he won't say so, thinks the same.
Let's say hi to Chris on the wildcard line in Tillamook, Oregon. Hi, Chris. Welcome.
Hi, Richard. First of all, I'd like to thank you. You do a wonderful job as a guest host.
Well, thank you. Great guests make my job very easy.
Yeah, you do. I always look so forward to you being on. And your guest tonight is doing a wonderful job. I just wanted to share a couple things. I've seen unidentified flying objects since, the first one was back in 1969, and then my wife and I saw one. We have property up around Mount Adams, and we saw one night up there. But the one that I'd really like to share is probably about 20 years ago. It was 4th of July night after the fireworks in Rockaway Beach, Oregon. And we were standing there, the show had just ended, and it was a beautiful night. The stars were out real clear, and all of a sudden you could see your basic huge triangle blocking out all the stars, and it was going along the horizon out over the ocean. And I told my wife, I said, "Do you see that?" And I was there with our church group, and I shared it with our pastor, and he didn't see it. But, you know, you share that with your fellow Christians, and most of them think you're crazy. But there's no doubt about it. I saw it, and it was just really something to see. And I just wanted to share that, and thank you again. Thank your guest. He's doing a wonderful job tonight.
Thank you, Chris. I'm not sure what Christianity has to do with disbelieving in unidentified objects. I know many Christians that believe, or many that don't.
Well, I found very few that agree with them.
They may quibble with the origin. I mean, if you put things, I suppose, through your faith filter, it has to follow along a certain narrative, a biblical narrative, and so you have to understand the phenomena through that filter. But everyone has a filter of some sort. Christians have a filter. Materialists have a filter. Everybody has a filter, Chris. James, did you want to respond to the sighting at Mount Adams?
Yeah, I think Chris, living in a beautiful area of the States in Oregon, is very lucky. And I think he's, you know, he probably appreciates that luck more than most people. But the July 4th one at Rockaway Beach is just typical of the sorts of sightings that are being made all the time of triangles. We have them here. We have them in Belgium. We've got recent sightings in France. There are sightings in the UK, in the US all the time. And just to take up, you know, Mike's point, the Chinese and the Russians have their UFO sightings as well, and so do the Indians. And where objects that are going out over the sea, like this triangle, you have to also bring into the equation the fact that these things are seen going into and out of the sea on regular occasions. I mean, the Russians actually revealed back in the 90s that they had estimated something like 60% of UFOs were sea-based, not land-based or not land-oriented. So thanks, Chris. That's a good example.
Excellent sighting. Let's see. Mike is in Houston, Texas. Mike, good morning.
Hey, Richard. It's nice to talk to you again. And James, excellent show tonight. I've enjoyed it immensely. James, I just want to get your opinion on what you, who do you think are the top five UFO investigators in the UK and the US, and what your thoughts were on To the Stars Academy, if you thought that they're going to reveal anything that is unknown at this point. And I also wanted to say, I think that probably there's UFO bases underwater. I think that's where the reconnaissance bases are probably found, will be found, and as well as around mountain ranges.
All right, Mike, great questions. Go ahead, James.
Yeah, sorry, Richard. I think it is a great question, Mike. I think the just to go back to the To the Stars, take that one first. I mean, the amount of evidence that is coming into that organization now gives me some hope that maybe things will start to happen, because they are a serious organization looking for scientific evidence. And it's interesting that the Department of Defense released their videos, the U.S. Navy videos, to that particular institute, and clearly expect them to do something with them. Those videos were highly compelling. But you asked who my top five UFO investigators were. I think it's a bit like sort of the Top of the Pops thing. It depends, actually, whether you allow me to include dead people, because I think a lot of the previous guys who did work in this area did incredible work and were not really recognized or lauded for what they did. And top of my list is Edward Ruppelt, who was the chief of Blue Book for a while. He wrote the book on flying saucers originally, and he and Donald Kehoe, of course. And the list goes on. James McDonald, Stanton Friedman, Bruce Maccabee, you know, is well up there in my top five. I'd really have a job getting it down to five, because nowadays you've got Stephen Greer doing good work. You've got you know, in this country, you've got David Clark, who's done sterling work on the whole thing. So, yeah, getting it down to five, I couldn't do, I don't think. But there are some wonderful names out there.
Mike, thank you for that. What does disclosure look to you? How does it look? How does it happen?
Disclosure?
Yeah, official disclosure, whatever that means.
Yeah. Official disclosure might be very disappointing, I think, because it implies that the government knows a great deal more than perhaps it does. You have to take into account that if governments know a great deal, there's not a lot coming out of that great deal. There's, people argue that our technological advance is based on retro engineering of UFOs, and I'm not convinced by that. I think we're perfectly capable of being able to advance technologically without deconstructing a UFO. And also, if we have got UFOs in hangars anywhere, probably the technology is so advanced that we're still grappling with what it actually is. So we've got an object sitting there, it floats, it flies through the space, it can exceed the speed of light, and it can do all sorts of things in the Earth's atmosphere. And we just do not understand how it does that. Our physics isn't advanced enough. So disclosure to me might be a bit of a disappointment for everybody.
Mike is in Tuscaloosa. Mike, good morning. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Oh, thanks. It's great to talk to you guys. I'm enjoying the show. I just want to relate a little incident that I had, and just if your guests could comment on it. I've been a police officer for 27 years. I just retired in January. About 10 years back, myself and another officer had gone to a little disturbance at a bar, and it was settled. It was just a verbal argument. We were standing around outside just waiting for the parties to leave. And while we were standing there in the southeast sky, I saw something. The best way I could describe it, it was a flat, rectangular, metallic object. And it dipped into our atmosphere for like a millisecond, or into our dimension, if you want to say. And then it was gone. It shot back up from where it had came. And, for a long time, and right after it happened, I asked the other officer, I said, did you see that? And she said, yeah, I saw it. And neither one of us said anything else about it again, But I thought it was very unusual. And then at one point, maybe within a year or so after that, I had happened to stop a traffic violator, and he turned out to be at NASA. He worked at NASA as a scientist of some kind, and I just asked his opinion of it, and he said no space junk or anything that comes down into our atmosphere will ever go back up again. And this thing clearly came down into our atmosphere, or into our dimension, if you want to say, for a millisecond, and then shot back up again. And it, in the appearance of the rectangular objects a lot of people describe, it looked similar to that, except it was not triangular, it was rectangular. So I'm going to get off the line and just let your guests comment on any other reports of anything like this have ever been made before.
Well, thank you, Mike. Thanks for checking in from the great city of Tuscaloosa. All right, James, here we have, a policeman, and as you point out in the book, when a trained observer like a policeman says, I just saw something very strange, we ought to stand up and take notice.
Yeah, I think it's very, very important that we don't discard these sorts of sightings, and it's a shame in many ways that Mike wasn't able to report that in the sort of environment that would have taken him seriously and done something about it, and his colleague obviously felt the same way. And to be honest, I think I would do exactly the same thing, just keep it to myself. And that's why people like Gordon Cooper said that, you know, something like 90% of UFO sightings by pilots, by military pilots, and by police officers do not get reported. But what Mike is talking about there is something that is very, very familiar. And I know police officers locally who have seen things and have never reported them, but they've told me about it. And you ask almost any serious ufologist who is a scientific ufologist, and they'll tell you exactly the same thing. What he saw, no one will ever know what that was. But, well, I say ever, that's a long time. But no one will know in our lifetimes, I don't think, what that was. But it's very, very common, rectangular objects. It's amazing how much that observer got from that fleeting incident there. Metallic, rectangular, came down, went back up again. And the NASA guy is absolutely right. Nothing that comes down can go back up again except something that's under power.
You know, Mike said something else that was very interesting, and this is something I hear time and time again from witnesses. They'll be in the presence of someone else. They'll both see it, maybe even more than two people. They'll acknowledge that they saw it at the moment, and then they'll never speak of it again. That's a very interesting psychological phenomena that's going on. Maybe we can discuss that when we come back. Here's Neil Diamond taking us into the break with Captain of a Shipwreck here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, welcome back. And if you like what you're hearing tonight, this morning, there are a lot of different ways and places to hear me. My weekly syndicated radio program is called The Conspiracy Show, and it broadcasts live out of Toronto Sunday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern on Zoomer Radio. That's a 50,000-watt blowtorch station that can be heard way down into the United States. And then I also have about 40 affiliates across North America. So if you go to strangeplanet.ca, strangeplanet.ca, for more info on the program, or to find an affiliate near you, or just download the free Conspiracy Show app, and you can listen anywhere in the world. And then two new podcasts, Conspiracy Unlimited. New episodes drop every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. ConspiracyUnlimitedPodcast.com to subscribe. And then The Rock and Roll Twilight Zone, heard on the Jericho Network. Just Google it. It's everywhere. Apple Podcasts, Google Play. New episodes drop every Wednesday. And this week, a special look at the life and death of Jim Morrison. Back to your phone calls for James Abbott when Coast to Coast continues right after this. Welcome back. James Abbott stays with us, The Outsider's Guide to UFOs. Before we get back to the phone calls, James, I believe it's the last chapter, or one of the last chapters you dedicate to, finding the way forward. What is the way forward? How do we push the needle in terms of, towards some sort of a disclosure, or ultimately finding out what the truth is? I mean, that's paramount, even above and beyond disclosure. How do we move that needle forward? What is the way forward?
Richard, I think the way forward has been clear to us for about three decades now, and that is that we need to research it properly, but that means money. The problem with disclosure is that governments may or may not tell us what they know, but we can't really wait for that. We'd be here till doomsday. And I think, the way we do it, the way we have to do it, is not an international basis. And that is set up a private organization which is truly international and is well funded. Now, I know that that puts me out on a very long limb as far as most of the ufologists are concerned, because they'll say that there are organizations investigating and there are people who are very serious about doing that, but they just don't have enough money and they don't have enough central credibility in terms of the science that they're doing. There are people trying very, very hard, but we need an international effort.
You point out something very interesting in the book, and that is when a study actually is set up, let's say there's been a there's a cluster of sightings somewhere, and then someone sets up a study, and then those sightings drop off dramatically. You say it's almost like the Heisenberg uncertainty principle at work here. What do you think is going on?
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? Exactly. A number of your listeners will be familiar with Project Twinkle back in the late 40s, early 50s. The U.S. decided to try and do a scientific study of UFOs in and around Alamogordo and Roswell and places like that. They set up listening stations and scientific instruments. The result was virtually nothing came out of it, and the sightings that had been reported by U.S. Air Force personnel and by locals dropped off unbelievably. And in a way, that sort of ties in with Hynek's mind and matter thing, that if there is some sort of psychic connection, then the fact that we are investigating it probably negates the phenomenon itself. So it's a bit like Heisenberg. If you observe something, then it won't exist, or it only exists if you observe it.
To the wild card line, Mary's in Modesto, California. Good morning, Mary. Welcome.
Hello. I just wanted to relate an incident that happened when I was a very young child. It was in the, I think, it could have been in the late 1940s, 45 to 49 maybe. I just don't remember how old I was. All I remember is that I was on Dayton Street in St. Louis, Missouri, maybe a block from Gamble Street. And that area is home to a large United States Air Force base, as well as an airport, commercial airport, so I was accustomed to jets flying over the area. But one day I was out, and it had to be good weather. I don't know if it was summer, spring, or fall, but it was good weather, and I was out playing on the sidewalk with a group of other children, I guess all girls, maybe five or six other children. And I happened to look up in the sky, and there was what looked like to me like a toy that children played with it at that time, a spinning top toy. This object was in the sky, and it was round, and it was light-colored on one half and dark-colored on the other, like light gray on one half and dark gray on the other, and I can't remember which half. And it was just sitting there in the sky, way up above, where I was as a child on the ground, but I could see it very clearly, and it was a light, clear day, sunny, no clouds or anything, no gray clouds or anything like that. And this object was just sitting there, and then it disappeared as quickly as it had seemed to be there. It was gone. It went up and just completely out of sight. And for some reason, I never talked about it to relatives, school, the kids I was playing with. I only mentioned it, I think, about once, and that was about 20 years ago, to a cab driver. He seemed to be very interested in it. But I think maybe other people, if they might have seen things like this in that same area, maybe ufologists, people who are experts on these things, could piece together something. And so I have no idea as to whether it was from another world or some black op operation of the United States government. All I know is what I saw, and I've never forgotten it.
Well, Mary, I'm honored that you would share that with us, since you've shared it with so few. We're all very pleased that you would share it with us, and thank you for that. James, that ticks a lot of the boxes on the sort of the list of fantastical UFO capabilities, doesn't it? Hovering, maneuverability, silent, all of that stuff.
Yeah, I have to thank you, Mary, for telling us that story. I really, really appreciate it. And the fact that you saw this thing and it did what it did, which is to float and then go back up in the sky. You I don't know whether you know about it, but in Chicago at O'Hare Airport much more recently, there was an incident in 2006 where the object appeared to float over the airport and then went straight up through a cloud. And that's exactly what you saw. And I can probably, if I was to delve around in my notes, I would find probably 20 or 30 people who would have similar sorts of experiences. So thanks very much for telling us that. That's a great story.
Indeed. Thank you, Mary. Let's say hi to George in Corpus Christi. Good morning, George. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hello. Hi, Mr. Sirrett. Thank you. It's an honor. Just one quick question. What's your guest take, Mr. Abbott, about the ancient alien series? I mean, have they always been here? They're still monitoring us? Is it just not coincidence, but all the evidence? And you have all these experts on that TV series. You have, you know, Tsoukalos is the main one, but Mr. Norrie made his comments there. Nick Pope, all these guests that are, I mean, all these scientific minds that, you know, that I just want to know his take on it. And I'll take the answer off the air.
All right, the Ancient Aliens series. Do you get that in England, James?
Yeah, we do. Yes, yeah. It's a good series. It's a very good series, and you know, Nick Pope is very knowledgeable about the whole thing, and I think it's not an area in which I've done much personal research, but I have to say it's another one of those areas where you have to keep an open mind. If the Earth is only 4.6-4.7 billion years old, and that's not old in universal terms. We've got star systems that are billions and billions of years older than that, and that's long enough for civilizations to have grown up and probably died several times over, and it's certainly time for, you know, it's the sort of time that an alien civilization, and I don't think anybody would be averse to me saying on the air that these alien civilizations probably exist somewhere out there. And if they do, maybe they found us a long time ago and they've been around looking at the Earth and trying to see what's going on. It may be that they're not really terribly interested in us as a species, but they're interested in maybe how we're growing, how we're learning, how we're developing, what sort of psychological turns we take, why we're so aggressive.
Thank you for the call, George. Joseph is in San Diego on the wild card line. Joseph, welcome to Coast.
Well, good evening, Mr. Sirrett, and I love your eclectic music taste. It's quite phenomenal. But I just wanted to share a couple short stories very quickly. I was for 9 years I spent my time in India studying the Vedic literature. I was a celibate monk, very close to Buddhism, but not Buddhist, but I studied the Vedic literature. And some of the things that they talk about in there about yogis that can travel on the light of the sun because they know how to practice hatha yoga for many, they're hundreds of years old. They live up in the Himalayas. And some things can be, some information can be derived about UFOs, extraterrestrials, we think of extraterrestrials, and some of them are basically yogis that live in the Himalayas that, you know, can do things, mystical things that most people can't do. But my question to Mr. Abbott is, the Billy Myers case seems to me to be the most profound case of, unless it's been debunked, but and he said that he met with a Pleiadian, an individual from the Pleiades, and he said, and the gentleman said, we're just here to tell you, if you don't change your ways on Earth, that's, you know, you're not gonna be able to help the Earth. And to me, if there were aliens, if they look at our civilization, how barbaric we are, slaughtering the animals, killing babies in the womb, why would they even want to come and help us? I think they would be, they just would look at us like little ants doing stupid things, you know? And I wonder what your guest thought of the Billy Myers case. Has his case been debunked? And can't we look at that case as the sort of topmost contact with at least one species of extraterrestrials?
Thanks for the call, Joseph. All right, James, you wanted to discuss Billy Meyer.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Joseph. Thanks for that. And to be just as a side issue, I agree with you about the music on the show. I love it. Billy Myers, yeah, he's been debunked about 15,000 times, and there are lots and lots of articles which explain in great detail how he did things and the fact that he couldn't possibly have met with anybody from the Pleiades. But, and this is a big but, I don't actually think that any of the debunkers hit the mark totally on any of those things. So my mind is open about Billy Myers and indeed about all the other people who have said they've seen and met with aliens over the years. I'm not prepared as a human being to say that any other human being is wrong until I have absolute and concrete proof of that being wrong. If somebody says to me they saw a ghost, then I'll say, yeah, fine. I mean, that's you know, that can happen. And so with Billy Myers, I think there are things about his cases that you sort of think about, and they are compelling. But, you know, as I say, yes, they've been debunked. But the story about India and the Vedic literature is interesting as well, because that comes up a lot in ufology. And indeed, it was something that Stanton Friedman talked about, and several other investigators have looked at over the years, the influence of aliens, if they exist, on British and continental civilizations, you know, Stonehenge, that sort of thing, and on the Indian civilizations, the very ancient civilizations in India and China.
All right, thank you so much for the call. Let's try to work in one more if we can. Ian is in Richmond, Ontario, first-time caller. Ian, welcome to Coast.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Richard, fantastic topic. James, I believe it's afternoon where you are, so good afternoon to you, sir. I'm just curious, what is the one report, whether it be a video or just a report that really raises the hairs on the back of your neck, that you think to yourself, this is 100% and there is no way that anybody can refute this, and yet, you know, there's always skeptics out there, and I will take my answer off the air.
All right, Ian, there's some beautiful bird sounds in the background. Either that or his phone is just making strange noises. I don't know if you can hear that, James. It sounds like he has a room full of finches or something. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it was a nice sound, actually. Yeah, and it's actually 10 o'clock in the morning here, but it's still, you know, early. The report that I would think is the most compelling, well, that's a really, really difficult one, because I've got 40 in the book that I think are really compelling, and I could make a case for any one of them as being the one. But there are two, really, that I think were particularly impressive, that raised the hairs on the back of my neck, as Ian said. One is the Lonnie Zamora case back in 1964, where a police officer sees an object on the ground with beings or people beside it, and it flies off. And the reason that that is so compelling for me, so fascinating, is because of what poor Lonnie Zamora had to suffer from that point on in his life. utter ridicule and scorn, people saying he was mad, he was seeing things, he was trying to make a lot of money, which he never did make. And that case, yeah, that raises the hairs, because if you think about it and you actually think that it might have been true, then, you know, those people, those beings were on the earth. And the other case that I think is very compelling is the Orinyi Airlines case in the UK in 2007, where an airline pilot flying out of Southampton, flying south towards what we call the Channel Islands, saw a big yellow cylindrical object lying about 80 miles away over another island. And not only did he see it, but he watched it for 20 minutes on the flight going out to the Channel Islands, and his passengers saw it. And that's pretty compelling, an airline pilot seeing that big yellow object. But not only did he see it, but a separate pilot in a separate aircraft saw the same thing, and so did people on the ground on the island of Guernsey. Now, that one is, you know, Ian said, is there one that's locked solid? I think that one is locked solid.
Well, thank you for the call, Ian. This has been great. I've enjoyed hanging out with you for the last 3 hours, James, and I appreciate your time. And again, when can we expect volume 2 of The Outsider's Guide to UFOs?
Probably about 6 months. But can I just say, Richard, it's been a real pleasure and a privilege to be on the show, and I've really enjoyed every minute of it.
Oh, likewise. And I hope we can do it again soon.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. You have a good afternoon.
And you,
James Abbott. For George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Nathan Staten, Donna Walker, Chris Burrows, Sean Latasore, and here in Toronto, Mike Ben Dixon, Robert Turner, and Patrick O'Neill, I'm Richard Serrett. Thank you for your ears and your voices, your beautiful voices. This is Coast to Coast AM. So long for now.